You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we believe that there is no algorithm for leadership, and so we interview great sports coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Our great coach on this episode is Tim Sheens. Tim is an Australian rugby league coach. He played 166 games for the Penrith Panthers and then moved into coaching in 1984. He coached the Canberra Raiders to premierships in 1989, 1990 and 94, and then in 2005 led the Wests Tigers to their first premiership. He has also coached the New South Wales team to the 1991 State of Origin Series win and the Australian team to the 2013 World Championship. Tim has been in the coaching business for over 40 years, and he has so much insight, wisdom and ideas to share. Some of the ones that stayed with me afterwards were the philosophy he borrowed from an American coach of being consistent in treating everybody differently, and how as a result he doesn't see people management in black and white terms. How he identifies three things that effective teams need to be doing every week. The first is working on their public perception, the second is thinking about the opposition, and the third is making sure that small groups within the organisation don't start talking negatively about other small groups. And how the best coaches are good recruiters and they select people who are going to suit their style. And just before we go to the interview, today's podcast is brought to you by the Macquarie University Business School's MBA program. Designed to empower, challenge, and transform, the Macquarie MBA gives you the business skills and knowledge you need to succeed in an evolving global economy. The program bridges the gap between theory and real-world application, bringing together world-leading professors, executives, and industry partners to teach you how business can be used for good. I have just started working with the team at Macquarie on some projects and can attest to the quality of the people and material. To find out more, search for Macquarie University Business School's MBA. And now, please enjoy our interview with Tim Sheens.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Tim Sheens, good afternoon and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. I'm thrilled to get you on. You're a legend of rugby league here in Australia, and I'm just thrilled that you said yes. So Tim, before we get going though, could you tell us where you are in the world and what you've been doing so far today?
I'm living in Sydney. I've spent, prior to coming back to the Tigers last year, I'd spent 6 or 7 years in England. And becoming a citizen as well, so dual citizenship. And my wife and I quite enjoy England, so we'll be travelling between, there and here. So, but the club asked me to come back initially to do administration, and then, of course, it moved forward onto interim coaching for Benji, to be quite honest, was pretty much how you'd call it. So, that's finished. And so I'm sort of sitting around every day's a Sunday, Paul. You know, you can get up when you want. It reminds me of COVID again, that dreaded thing, where when we're in England, it shut the football down, to be quite honest. And so I ended up, getting a bit lazy. So, I've been training and doing a bit extra, mate, yeah.
I can't imagine. We're going to go through the long arc of your career, Tim. Laziness isn't a word that comes to mind, but anyway, let's go through the story. And Tim, if I could, you've been in the game your whole life. You've coached against the greats, the greatest that rugby league in Australia has ever known. And you've also met so many other great coaches from sports, and not just in Australia, UK and Europe and everywhere else. But if I could start with just a simple question to get us going, what is it you think the great coaches do differently that sets them apart?
Yeah, that's a good point. You're talking about assistant coaches, for instance, or junior coaches, as opposed to maybe a professional coach. You know, like I've come from the semi-professional era, and through 97 it went full-time and professional in Australia with NRL. So I've seen, the 2 days a week, 3 days a week training times, and the four on, every day basically. I think to be successful, there's a number of things. You know, you've got to be a good manager of people. When it's all said and done, whether it's a CEO of any firm, it's managing your people. In our sport, of course, it's a team sport. There's 13 start and another four used from the bench. But in saying that, it's a team sport, but it's a team sport is full of individuals. And a lot of coaches fail to address that. They are coaching as a team. They attack them as a team. For instance, I'll give you a quick one. You're getting beat. Four of the players are really having a go. They're bleeding from the nose and the jaw and all the other things. And the coach gets at halftime and gives them all a spray. That the four players, particularly if they're the veteran players, the 29-year-olds, don't appreciate that sort of thing. So it is very difficult to understand just when you need to deal with them as a team and when you need to deal with them as individuals. Yeah. So that's one thing. I think also it's a time frame. It's certainly full on. It's a 24/7 job, full-time football, professional football, and you're dealing with, as opposed to your assistant coaches, you're dealing with the politics of the game. You're dealing with the politics within your club, outside your club, the media, social media, sponsors. And and it's an endless, I've got to do something there. I've got to go to this function. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And it's something you've got to do. It's an obligation you do. Most senior coaches get well paid. And so it's not just a matter of turning up game day, training and going on game day to get it done. It's a club thing, and you've got to deal with lots of different people. On top of that, you've got to set an environment. I think the environment the senior coach sets is so important. For instance, I believe you want the players to come to want to be at training, if you know what I mean. If you're going to, if you don't set the system up in a way that, you know, they're busing to be there early and they leave late, that's the type of person you want, and that's the type of system you have to have inside your club.
Tim, you talked there about being good at managing people. It's the first thing you said, actually. Mm. Now, if I've got my research right, you started taking on leadership roles way back in secondary school. And I'm wondering, who got you started back then? Who was helping you develop this man management skill back then?
I suppose I was born Catholic, Catholic school, so it was always Christian Brothers or Morris Brothers. Their discipline was strong, you know, in fact, so strong you copped the strap if you did the wrong thing in those days. But, you know, I was, for whatever it is, I don't know, I was popular with the schoolmates, and I seemed to always be a prefect, you know, as in school prink, and then I was end up school captain at St. Gregory's in my last year of school. But I always seemed to be popular in that regard, whether it was because I played football and I was captain of the team regularly or something like that, I don't know. But the brothers, Morris Brothers and Christian Brothers, had a lot to do with it. Particularly my 2 years at St. Gregory's, the Morris Brothers there were very, and I was at the age then of, you know, 17, 18, that type of age. My father had passed away, my grandfather had passed away, so not many men in my life, but they were, I was at boarding school for 2 years and, you know, did had a lot of help from the brothers. As I said, I was school principal there in 68, God, how far, how long ago was that? And that helps, you know, I had to get up and make speeches. I had to meet people from the, you know, dignitaries that came to the school, and I was the, you know, I was representing the students. So that's maybe that had something to do with it, I suppose. You know, and I enjoy, you know, players who are captains generally. The 13 World Cup side I took had a heap of captains in it, you know, captains of their respective sites. And generally there's a personality with a captain, you know, one way or another. And so not that I'd pick them just to be because they're a captain, but you'd be surprised how many captains play for Australia, for instance, or play for New South Wales and Queensland, that type of thing, yeah.
I was also went to a brother's school that was marked by discipline, but your style's not, doesn't seem to be focused on that, Tim. It's interesting that these people shaped you early, but it seems to be very calm and focused on the team and its strengths, not necessarily, you know, discipline and hard rigor, which we often hear about when we talk to rugby league coaches.
Yeah, I think people don't know as much about me as I think they do. I've had my little rants, and I've certainly, but it's not something that's a constant day in and day out. My personality is to work with the individual and try to get, you reason with them, you help them, and you show interest in them, you generally get a result. Now, the difference is, though, is you've got, I use it's not mine. I got it from an American coach. I can't recall exactly where it was that long ago, but it was be consistent with treating everybody differently. Now, that is a 29-year-old veteran and a 19-year-old rookie are two different people. And so if they're both playing in the same team, you know, you've got to treat them differently but be fair. So it's a matter of working. I prefer to work on that system. Then again, you know, sometimes the so-called disciplinarians, if they do the wrong thing as a 29-year-old veteran or a 19-year-old kid, they still get disciplined, but it's a different discipline. You know, I expect more from the veteran. I'd give the kid a second chance. Depending on what it is, it's a third or fourth chance even. You know, sometimes it's just not that black and white that, you know, make another mistake and you're gone from the team or you're gone from the club. But a veteran could play poorly for a couple of games and still make the team, whereas a 19-year-old's not going to, you know, that type of thing. So it is there's variation to your disciplines and how you handle it. But I find, yeah, you've got to assess exactly what makes the athlete kick, whether it's, an arm around the shoulder or a kick up the tail, a reminder about this, that, and the other thing. You've just got to be switched on. You've got to know your player, know your people. And that's just not your players. That's your coaching staff. That's your general staff. That's the office staff. That's the CEO. You got to know how to handle them as well. So it's a matter of that's how I operate. They train hard, but they enjoy training because I like to put a football in their hand to train. I grew up doing road runs through the Penrith Mountains and getting flogged and having coaches say, we'll give them the ball in January and make them hungry for it, you know, so we didn't have a football in our hand. So, you know, our first few games, obviously, your skill levels were down. So, you know, those sort of things, because I had 13 coaches in the, eight first grade coaches in the 13 years I played with Penrith, eight. So whether I learned something from everyone, but I certainly learned a lot about the fact that you don't last long if you've not set the system up properly, if you don't deal with your players properly, if you don't treat them with the respect they're due, particularly, again, the 100, 200 game player versus a 19-year-old rookie. So those sorts of things are, where I come from, you know.
You've, as you said, you started out in Penrith. You had a great career out there. Then you coached them. You took them to their first finals. You took Canberra and West to their first premiership. I mean, it's just been a long and storied career, Tim, and I'm wondering what insight this has given you about helping teams step up and realise their potential.
To start with, one of the things as a coach or a manager you've got to have is good recruitment policy and have a good eye for that type of thing. I think the best coaches are good recruiters, and you started me off with what makes a good coach. Because really, as Jack Gibson, one of the famous coaches that you say that that we're in the game, and certainly I coached against him, I had the privilege of coaching against him just at the back end of his career, the players have something to do with it. A nice, simple statement he used to make when they won premierships. And it's true. You've got to develop the right group. They might not all be representative players, but they have to suit your style. My style is obviously an attacking style. The rule book says score more points than the opposition, and I take that literally and look for an offensive game. And in fact, a good offense will beat a well-organized defense any day, any day. The coaches who say, it's all about defense, with respect, that's their philosophy. That's not mine. You've still got to be able to tackle, right? But it's not about if you're going to go out there and say, we'll just defend ourselves, defend every week and not score enough points, you're not going to win. Most teams will score points at you. You've got to be able to score more than them. That in turn is a defense, if you follow what I'm saying. Not that you don't do anything about it, but the individual needs to be able to tackle and be physically fit and strong and so on and so on. So, I'm getting off the track a little bit, but at the end of the day, your philosophies and your recruitment and so on are very important. For those first, for instance, the Penrith one, I think was as good a coaching as I've ever done. And for me personally, because of where we finished through the 70s and early 80s when I played, we never made a semi-final. Mind you, it was top five, but we never made a semi-final. So to make a semi-final in 85 was, to me, as good a thing as I've coached. And that includes the grand finals and World Cup and all that sort of stuff that I've won.
Tim, the words that come up a lot when people talk about your coaching style are innovation, experimentation, just trying new things. It seems to be a trademark of what you do. You say it's an offensive style, but you're also innovating. Now,
yes,
people that innovate often get a lot of feedback, and not all of it's good. I'm wondering how you've learned to deal with the more conservative stakeholders in the game as you've gone about changing the game?
Well, generally as first grade coach, you get a fair amount of what you want. You know, if you want a piece of equipment, or you need to take them on a camp, or you need to do, you know, I was pushing for training centres way back when I was at the Raiders. We looked at some schools that closed down in the ACT, and we were going to do that. They eventually their first training centre was they put it up on a piece of land that was, you know, Tech College allowed them to put a building up and use their field, you know. So I'd seen that in America and so on. So getting a professional setup was what I was looking for right back in those days. And the club was prepared to help in big time. So I haven't had much trouble or pushback from that type of thing. But part of being, you know, different or innovative or whatever you want to call it is to spark the players. You know, they train hard. In the old days, they were training 3 days, playing on the fourth day of a 7 day week, and then working, you know. So it was pretty hard on them to turn up and then have a full day's work, turn up for training, and then say, right, oh, now we're going to just run, you know, 2K runs, 5K runs, road runs. You know, we're going to flog the hell out of you. So, and not put a football in their hand, which is what they play for. You know, the football is the best thing you can do as a coach, whether it's a soccer ball or football or baseball or whatever, is to get them out there practicing, you know, and training while you practice is the best thing. These days, of course, with all the GPS they can put on them, you don't have to have too many times, you know, with a stopwatch anymore. You can pick up what their speed is and everything, you know, basically on the vest they wear these days. So, but again, the whole thing needs to be, I want to be there, you know, and if players are coming in late or they're straggling or they're that type of thing, obviously the environment isn't right and you've got to work hard to make sure that it is. So as well as challenging, most athletes are really competitive, you know, that drives them into athletics or football or whatever sport. So the training has to be competitive as well. And rewards for wins and other things I always found work really well, because the one thing they wanted to do, if you played the left edge against your right edge in defense and offense, they really competed hard. So as much as possible, you know, I use that type of technique. A lot of coaches at those same days in those days were just using stopwatches to run hundreds and 20, and, you know, doing 20 hundreds and doing all these sorts of things. Although the conditioners were involved in that as well. I was lucky to have some very good people who said to me, yeah, we should be doing more with this and more with that. And of course, whatever we do with a ball in the hand. 90% of it has to be with a football in their hands. The fundamental thing about winning a game or doing anything is to be able to control the football. And if you can't pass and you can't, you know, your kickers can't kick and your catchers can't catch because they're not doing anything with the ball on a regular basis. They do these days, but in the old days when it was 3 days a week, it was, you know, Tuesday they flogged you. Thursday you did some ball work, and Saturday you did a captain's run and went for a beer before you played on Sunday. So it's changed quite significantly from there.
The world has changed.
It sure has, yeah. But as far as I say, you know, you're the discipline type of thing, there are coaches who do a lot of jumping and are very active in the box, and you think a lot of people think that's great. They're passionate and so on. But God love them, most of them, they need someone in the box for them to translate what they're saying down to the sideline to pass, take it onto the ground. I'm not going to use any examples there, but I know it for a fact. So it is everyone's different. You know, again, you coach your personality. If you're an intense person, and you're an intense player or athlete, you'll be intense if you're a coach. Because if you're not, you're not true to your spirit, you know. So, but it's how you control that, you know, how you control it.
Tim, how much of your communication, if you look at an average week and you divide it up on a pie chart, how much of it's individual with the players versus speaking to collectives of people, groups?
Depends. Again, pre-season, it's a lot more, you spend a lot more time with them, individually and as groups, because you're explaining a new season starting, you've got fresh players coming in. You've got, if you're new to the club, for instance, even, you know, you've got a lot of things to do. The language is very important, the what they call their plays and so on and so on. So all of that has to be practiced. You've got to introduce the new players that come generally to your club every year or grow up through your system coming through the juniors. And so, pre-season's different to during season, and of course then post at the back of the season, if you're in the big games, you're doing a lot more with individuals again. So I don't know if I could put a, as you say, a pie on it, you know, what percentage it would be. All I know is that I would deal with them more individually in pre-season and just towards the back end of the season if you're chasing semi-finals and so on. There's a lot of work to be done in respect to keeping them focused and not panicking and so on and so on. And then, of course, if you make the finals, there's a hell of a lot of – that changes things as well. That's a different scenario again. But one thing's for sure, I do a lot of one-on-ones with players. I like to hear their individual input into what happened during the game. And also I like to give them my input as well, but I'm interested to hear what they think about the game. Because during the game, you can discuss things with the key people, your spine, as they call it, you know, your key people that are running the game. But the guy out on the wing or the guy, you know, in the centres or in the middle of the scrum, he's got an opinion as well. And it's interesting to get it because sometimes you get a feeling of, you know, what happened here, we didn't do this, we didn't do that, and so on and so on. And it's not always who you thought or what you thought when you really talk to people, or, and again, when you look at your video, because coaches do interviews straight after a game. And the league do that deliberately, as do the media, because they want the emotion that comes with just after the game, you know. And of course, that's where coaches get fined. Ask Rick. He's, you know, when he gets, you know, fired up. But then sometimes you go home, watch the video, and you think, oh, hell, you know. I was quite something wrong there. Yeah, I did the wrong thing there or whatever. You know, it doesn't always compute that the two things come together nicely. So sometimes you're paying fines, other times you get an apology, and sometimes you have to give an apology. So, but it is emotional. It's, yeah, professional sport, and it is win or be sacked. And we've all, you know, they talk about coaches are waiting to be sacked. Yeah, that's basically when you start coaching. It's a matter of how long before you're sacked. And we've all had a level of that, even the best, Wayne Bennett and so on. So, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean that you're not a good coach. It just means sometimes you're a round peg in a square hole. You don't fit with the organisation and you need to find a round hole to join, yeah.
Can I pick up on emotions and intensity, Tim? Another word that comes up is intensity. People talk about you being intense, but they also reference it when it comes to the way you prepare people, the train, and the way you focus on performance. You've had such a long journey and time in the game. I'm wondering, you must have found a way to switch this intensity on and off, or I imagine you just would have burnt out. Is there anything that you've learned that you think others could fold into their own toolkit to get better at switching that intensity on and off?
Yeah, it is interesting that as a person yourself, you're dealing, if you're coaching or you're playing, you're starting at, you know, teenager, generally between there and your retirement, you get married and you have children. The kids do that and coaches are the same. You know, your family life is tough on your family. There's no doubt if you're full on. And so, you know, the priorities are, it's like there's a job and there's a profession. You know, professions are 24/7. You know, you're thinking about it. You're not always working, but you're thinking about it. The players can go home, look at their video and forget it, and then train and not worry about it. Coaches are forever thinking about it from the day, from the end of the last whistle, the final whistle on the day. You've got three injuries. You've got all these sorts of things. You've got poor players that you think have played poorly, and you've warned them, so you've probably got to change a couple of players. I generally try not to drop a player without giving him a warning, particularly a senior player. A 19-year-old might be in for the week and out straight away because the other player comes back in and you've got to deal with that. But, yeah, it is constantly your head's in it, even if your legs aren't. You're not running around with them and doing, you know, those sorts of things. But to say, I think, what is it, 40 years or something since I started professionally coaching this year. And, I look back and think, where's that time gone, you know, because when you're flat out, time goes fast. I used to count the calendar by the season, you know, round five, yeah, round 10. But having an interest, like having, you know, some coaches play golf, some do this, some, you know, a lot of them get out just to get out. And I use the gym a bit. I haven't got a lot of interest. The shoulder doesn't let me hit a golf ball anymore. But you try to switch off. It's not easy. It's not easy. And people will tell you, Sheens talks football under the water, you know, and you're getting that gist now. You know, this interview is going to go longer than you think. But it is one of those things that, you know, it's cost me in my personal life a bit. There are consequences, you know, for the game, but the game's been good to me, and you know, I've had plenty of ups and plenty of downs, you know, but over a period of time, it was the thing that I, you know, as I say, you know, you don't work a day in your life if you're doing something you enjoy, and I think that's I didn't see getting up at 5 to go to work and coming home at 9 at night as work. It was just enjoyment. I enjoyed doing what I had to do.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Can I ask you, Tim, I don't want to ask you about the downs. There's been enough written about the whole incident recently with the disgraceful decision that,
yeah,
that West's made. I don't think we need to go into it. I think that there's been enough written.
No, I don't want to talk about it.
But one of the things, you know, you always asked your players, and this has been consistent through your career, to develop the ability to play at least two positions. Now, in a world where we're increasingly being pushed into specialisation, we're getting smaller and smaller pigeonholes. Why was more generalisation important to you?
Because in a long season, unless you've got, and particularly under salary cap, you've got limited access to players of experience. In the old days, there's no salary cap. You could buy a player halfway through the year, and that's not a problem as long as the club could afford it. So you needed versatility from the point of view of an injury during a game. You know, you carry 4 interchange, but in days gone by, it used to be 2 and various other various versions of it, unlimited when Super League first kicked off. So you need to be able to, in an instant say, we'll move so-and-so to that position and we'll put so-and-so onto something else. So, you know, you've got to train them in sometimes those positions as well. You know, you've got to, for instance, you know, Benji Marshall started as a centre. If I didn't have Brett Hodgson, I probably would have played in fullback. I didn't have a 5'8", so we ended up at 5'8", which where he played at school. But he's played other positions during the game because he is an athlete. Robbie Farrar did the same. Ricky Stewart was a specialist half. Laurie Daly, though, played 5'8", centre, lock forward and fullback in the early days until he settled down as a 5'8". So, you know, on their way through, for instance, you know, players developing the skills to be a first grader rather than a schoolboy, you know, sometimes you've got to, you know, take a back seat and play just to get a game in any position. So I know at school I was always a 5'8 centre and I went to grade and I was big enough, but I was big for a 5'8", but I was too slow for 5'8 in first grade. So the coach said, you go into the forwards, you're big enough, and you'll be. And the bit of speed that I did have and skill from being a 5'8 helped me be a forward, you know. So I learned in the early days, you know, and I saw it regularly. Players come in as a 19-year-old centre and end up a 29-year-old back rower or front rower. Ask Jason Croker. Jason went from wing to centre to 5'8 to lock forward to second row to front row. He went all that way through. Not because he was getting lazy and fat. It's because as he got older, he slowed a bit, but he's a tough kid and he just played anywhere you wanted him to play. The dreaded, as they call it in our game, utility player who plays in the 14 jumper regularly, you know, he can play three or four positions. He can play halfback, 5'8", hooker if you needed to be. He'd play lock forward. I played Cameron Smith lock forward during games at times and brought on a fresh hooker. Those sorts of things are just, you know, it'd be lovely to say 13 will start, those 13 will stay in those positions and so on. The four on the bench have to cover 13 positions to start with. And although the positions are cut down, I mean, they've got two centres, but you've got a left and a right and two second rowers, two wingers, two front rowers, I know. But even playing left and right is a challenge for some players who carry a ball specifically in the right hand can struggle sometimes playing on the left side of the field, you know, because they're carrying with the ball in the area where the impact zone. So even the four players that you've got to balance, those four players have got to be able to play somewhere in the 13 positions. And so having them being able to play two or three positions and understanding that that's their role, it's a 17-man game these days. But the interchange guy, or you get an injury during the game, or you get a send off, or you get a sin bin, you've got to be able to adjust fairly quickly. So they've got to know how to play. I don't teach them all how to kick or anything, yeah. But Glenn Lazarus could kick a ball. Daryl Broman for Penrith, you know, they're just because they were pigeonholed into a position didn't mean they didn't have skill levels. Glenn Lazarus came from the second row and I put him in the front row because of an injury, a serious injury to Brent Todd, which was a year injury. So Glenn started playing front row for the year and ended up probably the best front row, or one of them anyway, just to have played the game, certainly on his result. Yeah, that's basically why. And I think most coaches have it in their heads, you know, oh, he could play centre if he had to, or he can play second row, you know. They're out there on the edge side by side anyway these days, you know. The game's changed dramatically from the two centres playing together and that type of thing, which was the rugby union style in us as we came. And Warren Ryan, of course, dramatically changed the game into left and right, and that was a made. I give him all the credit for that.
Tim, there's this term in the USA. It's not used so much actually in Australia or Europe. It's called a coaching tree, and they use it to describe, you know, people that have played under you as players and have gone on to coach themselves. Now, what's interesting about your tree is there are four other men who have gone on to become premiership coaches. Now, what sort of, and of course, there's one who's tragically passed away. But what I wanted to ask you was, you've had some success at being a leader yourself, but also nurturing other people to go on and lead. And I'm wondering if you've identified anything that's important when it comes to developing future talent to lead.
Yeah, generally, Paul, they'll come from they're intelligent players. They'll come from around your ruck area, you know, the spine, the hooker, the halfbacks, the fullback, you know, centres, you know, Mal, for instance, played centre all his career, although I did see him play back row once on a tour under old Don Ferner, and he didn't like it. But overall, though, coaches have come from systems where they've had to think about the game while they're playing it. You know, they're the smarter players. But to say you can pick them, no, I could never pick Laurie Daly as a coach, let alone a media guy, or Rick. Rick said to me once, I don't know. I said, you want a coach? He said, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do until I do it. You know, he was a very off-the-cuff player. Des Hassel was exactly the same. I played with Des. He's a Penrith junior. Even though he hates me saying that because I'm so old, he says, you stay. But my last year was his first year in grade. Anyway, so, yeah, it does it just you never know. I mean, Craig Bellamy is a classic. I gave Craig his first job as the under-23s coach or under-21s. I can't remember now, but it was the third-grade side. And Craig, I thought, would go into conditioning and, that type of – that side of the game, performance in that regard, because he was very, very fit and pushed himself to the limits and so on, and was interested, you know, in that, and a great bloke, you know, outside of when he's intense, he's a terrific bloke. Yeah, and that's his trade off for the intensity. I think the players still love him, but and that helps, of course, when you get results, doesn't it? You know, you justify anything you can do then once you've got the experience and the results. But I wouldn't have picked Laurie Daly, as I said, as a media guy, or Greg Alexander as a media guy. They're young idiots who run around young. You can't put it, and you shouldn't try to put a 30-year-old head on a 19-year-old kid. That's, again, another thing I've learned, you know, by treating them differently. You know they're going to make mistakes. You know that they're young. But to say some, you know, sometimes you can see it. Other times, a young kid at West, I won't name him, but didn't play a lot of first grade, but he was a captain of the lower grades. Very smart kid, and I thought, this kid will be a good coach. We might even make a good referee, because the referees were looking for young players who weren't quite going to make it, and went around the clubs asking, you know, would there be any, and they were going to become apprentice referees, you know. This is prior to the two referee system we had for a while, and then, of course, the two referee system, a lot of the younger blokes got game time because they were part of the second referee on the game. Anyway, I put it to him about being a referee. He said, no way in the world, because he didn't want to. He thought the referees were the worst thing ever, but I'd seen him turn referees inside out on the field with knowing the rules and all the other things, that, which is why I loved him. But he knocked back $90,000 a year to be an apprentice referee, and I think he regrets it these days. But so you can't always pick who's going to jump out of the air and be a coach, and yet alone be a successful coach. So a lot of players become assistant coaches, no doubt. Not all of them go on to be first grade coaches, let alone great first grade coaches who win premierships. And although, you know, you can sometimes fall into a group if you're lucky. When you coach, when you leave a club, you leave a legacy, and when you go to a club, you gain a legacy from that previous administration. There's always some good and bad in that, both ways. And so it's, you know, being able to learn to be able to then take the good and improve it, and not everyone can do that. Every now and then you get a champion team that, as I was lucky enough with Canberra, although we had two champion teams there. We had the 87, 88 group, 89, 90, 91, lost them to salary cap, and then we reinvented the 94 side, and that, yeah, 93, we should have won it or could have won it, except for my captain who wouldn't come off the field. That's Rick again. I can say these things because I know he'll take it. He'll take it with a grin. It was a lesson well learned. He broke his end up. I was going to move him in a Parramatta game about three games from the end of the season. We were really demolishing sides. We were leading Parramatta by 60 points and at home. I said, I'll give Ricky a break. Anyway, the trainer went out and he gave the trainer a gobful. I'm not coming off. A minute later, he badly fractured and broke his leg, his ankle. So he missed the semis and we went straight in and straight out. So I every now and then remind him about that. So I think it was a very good experience from the point of view of if a player tells him he's staying on the field, not coming off when he wants to take you off, Ricky has something to say about it. So, those sorts of experiences, you just don't know, you know. Like Rick went, he left the club after I did and ended up at Canterbury and then Roosters give him a junior start in coaching and away he went, you know. So he's done a great job. So Laurie, representative coaching, Mal, representative coaching, you know, that's their things that, you know, they all have the intelligence to the game. That's the first thing that you'd say. If you're not a smart player, you're not going to be a smart coach, you know. But and in saying that, I'm not having to go at every player. You know, there's certain amounts of players who you play in a position where they've got their job to do and that's it. They don't mind. You know, it's an important part. Every part of the game is important. But some people have to run the game. They have to see the game in their head. Peter Sterling, for instance, I always remember the comment he made when asked about, you know, how do you read the game? He said, take your eyes off the play the ball. You know, and actually have a look at the game, you know. So little things like that are players that, you know, you're going to say, well, you know, a percentage of them may end up coaching. Yeah. And Craig went on to do performance with Wayne Bennett at Broncos, and then gradually started to, you know, throw in a few ideas and so on and so on, and getting a coaching gig when Wayne was away on rep footy or something, and he took the first grade side and played West, I think it was, at Campbelltown, had a win, and they called the Bronco Babies or Baby Broncos or something it was, that's right. And Craig then just went, you know, further and further up the ladder with the Broncos with Wayne, and had to leave, obviously, to get a job. Fortunately for me, West Tigers interviewed him and he knocked him back and went on to Melbourne, which was fortunate for him. And fortunate for me, I got the job after him. So after coaching him at Raiders, yeah.
There's a couple of names in there which I'll be chasing down, listeners, over the next year or so. I don't know. Craig Bellamy will go on to be a legend of the game. Mel Meninga, Warren Ryan. I mean, some of the names are just legends. Yeah. But I'd like to stick with you, if we can, Mr. Sheens, because we're not finished yet. I want to go back in time. Your great uncle played the first ever game for Balmain. When I found that stat, I thought that was quite amazing, because 100 years later, you're coaching the team. Mm. It's quite amazing. And, you know, the great thing about rugby league is this. It's just such a game of belonging and identity. And I wanted to ask you what you've learned about creating this sense of connection, motivation, and identity in a group, which is often just full of professionals moving from one club to another.
Mm, yeah. Ricky's very big on this too. I'm actually going down to say hello to him and do some things for the club next week, actually. I think he understood. He made a comment which about the Raiders of his era, about how close they were as players, how they did everything together, trained hard, competed hard, drank hard, but, you know, had a bond. The fact that they were successful because they were talented obviously helped that too. Because nothing better than winning to bring a group of players together. You know, you have a bad season, it can fracture you somewhat, you know, because you've got to make some big decisions on who stays, who doesn't. Whereas a really good premiership standard side or a top four standard side, and I say top four, not top eight, top four is where you need to be if you're really going to be a chance to win a competition. And a winning team in that regard, the momentum tends to keep you going. There's lots of things that help you as a coach. certainly if you're coaching down the other end of the scale, it's tough, yeah. You know, my first gig was Penrith in 1984, and he made me professional. I was probably one of the first, if not the first, professional coach in rugby league in Australia. Although Jack Gibson was independently wealthy, so he didn't work out. but you know what I mean. Like most of guys were school teachers, and yeah, God, I mean, I've got a bust of his head that I bought at an auction, weighs a ton. Used to put my cap on top of it. So he was really good to me, Jack, even when he was coaching against me. The back end, as I said, back end of his career. But the situation of, you know, the morale and the general feeling, not just in a team, it has to be in your club as well. It has to be your people. Now, I remember the Tigers, for instance. I was living at Penrith when I first came down from Townsville. I was getting up at 4 to get to work and beat the traffic. Which comes down from the mountains there, you know, and going to Sydney. And there'd be someone there at training, someone there at the club before me, the conditioner and even the CEO. He came from Campbelltown, Stephen Noyce. So it was people there before you got there, people there after you got there. There was no one in a hurry to leave at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when the players finished. The players would do extras or they'd hang together, they'd go and have a coffee together. And I encouraged that. I'm not taking credit for it, but as soon as I smelt it, I encouraged it. It's that type of people you need. You know, there's three things you've got to be looking for. You know, one is public perception, what they think of your club and your team. Two is public perception, your opposition, and little groups over here talking about little groups over there. They're the three things you've got to work on all the time. What they think of your club, what they think of your team. So you've got to do promos. You've got to do all sorts of things outside just playing football. You've got to sell your club. Your opposition is obvious, right? This is in any business I'm talking about, let alone sport.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it applies to all businesses. So you've got your opposition. That's a natural. We're always trying to improve ourselves to be better than them. And then you've got little groups talking about little groups. And what happens there, that splits your club. You know, you get that little politic thing happening. That doesn't mean, you know, having a lunch there and having a bit of lunch here. I'm generally talking about inside your organisation, there are groups. And they're talking about other groups inside the organisation. That's the thing that'll drag your club down and drag your morale down. So you've got to do something about that every day. We obviously do something about the opposition every day. We come to training to prepare and beat them. The other one is public perception these days, particularly with your websites and your you can control the narrative, not let the media do it. You can control them, and you've got a website. And you get the news first, so you push the narrative, and you talk to people who've got angst with you, you know, whether it's a sponsor or this, that, or the other thing. You go to fan engagement days as a coach, and you talk. Yeah, you know? They generally get it wrong. You'd be surprised how many times they get it wrong. We thought this and we thought that, you know. And then, of course, making sure that everybody inside the organisation is is when I say happy with one another, you can always, you've always got competition inside that I won't have groups shooting other groups down. Yeah, that's a major problem.
Tim, if I could take you back, I've got the time machine downstairs, I'll dust it off. If I could take you back and introduce you to that young man who was studying law, right? He was studying law and he was thinking about which path to take in life. Knowing what you know now, what would you say to him?
Part of me would say, why didn't you finish your law degree and become a lawyer? there are days like that. But really, no, Paul, I think given the experience I've had and the game's been really good to me. I've had my rough moments, as I say, but overall the game's been really good to me. Roy Simmons said it, he's got dementia. He will not blame the game for dementia. And he would hit you over the ear if you tried to say that to him, you know. He knew what he was doing and the game was good to him and has been and still continues to be good to him. So it is something that, as I said earlier, you know, I haven't worked a day in my life because I've been involved with footy and I've enjoyed every moment of it. And the experience that comes with your downs as well prepares you for those things. And so, you understand it's experience. It's the 29-year-old veteran, as you get older as a coach, you know what to expect and how to manage it if you can. Sometimes it's out of your hands. You know, referee, two things anyway, injury and referees, as in ruled interpretations, are the two things you've got very little, if no, say in. And they're the two things that can really destroy you. You lose key players during your year, you can't replace them. And people think you should be able to, but it's, excuse the expression, but it's bullshit. You can't. You haven't got a roster in salary cap. Some clubs have, but you haven't got a key halfback to replace another key halfback, and that type of thing. Even some of the more stronger clubs will tell you that. Roosters have had trouble over a few years over halfback, since Cooper, injuries to their key people. You lose your fullback like I lost Tedesco in 2012 in the very first game. He did a cruciate ligament, lost him for the year. I'd still be coaching West Tigers if Teddy continued to play. And I say that, I genuinely say that, and I think it was proven, when as he continued to play for the Tigers for that short period of time after that and then grabbed by the Roosters. So, key players and a poor decision or a bounce of the ball. That's probably the third one. That shaped ball never bounces true. So it's one of those things that you've got certain things and you tend to learn and live with that. But some never get over the referee thing. And understandably, because referees going full time and got video reviews now and so on, which is why it all came in, to decide was it a try or not a try. Video refereeing, which has expanded out to, giving the captains a say and so on. It's been great. It's a great, system, but it's still human nature and human error and human interpretation, So they're going to get it wrong at times. Unfortunately, if it happens to hurt you, a key one, it comes down hard on referees. So I feel for them. I'd never want to be one, but I feel for them. I've seen it from the days when, as I say, they were part-time right through to being fully professional, well-paid officials now with, the amount of tech they've got to cover themselves is brilliant, But even then with them, they get them wrong sometimes, the interpretations and so on. So, but sometimes, obviously that keeps the media in business, so... Without controversy in our game, they'd have nothing to write about. It's not like TV. In the old days, there's only a certain amount of games on TV, so you had to go to the game to see your game. And the media had to go and report the game. He scored a good try. And just, they don't do that anymore. Everyone can stay at home and watch it on flat-screen TVs. Get a better view than you do at the ground. So, it's changed a lot, but put the pressure on a lot of people, players, referees. They can look up your nose with those cameras these days. And you're under the spotlight. So there's a whole heap of things that have changed. And sometimes that's why I'd say, why didn't I become a solicitor? I was actually doing more as an article clerk, working in Penrith and playing at the same. Started playing at the same time, so around just after I got out of school.
Well, look, Tim, I want to finish with one last question, if I could. And we're back to Ricky Stewart, of course. Ricky kindly introduced me to you, and yeah. Ricky, of course, for those listening, was one of the great coaches we interviewed a year or so back. But Ricky had this interesting quote, Tim. He said, "The greatest compliment for a coach is to have others copy you, and a lot copied Tim." But what he doesn't say is exactly what they copied. So I wanted to just to finish, Tim, by asking you, in those quite small moments when you do reflect, what is it that you hope that these other people have copied from you in a positive way?
I think I'd like to think anyway, although I've been criticised for it sometimes, and is I like to play an open style of game. You know, from the point of view of, and I recruit players accordingly. But that all started with just common sense. If you haven't got a massive forward pack and you've got a brilliant back line, well, you play to your strengths. You might improve your forwards, and that was the Raiders in 88 when I got there. They had a big name back line and a no-name forward pack. But eventually the forwards, the Lazaruses, Walters and Bradley Clydes of this world, you know, turned out to be as good as anyone that played. But, you know, at the time I had with Ricky and Laurie and Mal Meninga and, you know, Laurie in the centres, 5'8", you know, Peter Jackson, Chris O'Sullivan, Ivan Henjak, you know, Kevin Walters. They were all playing there in 88. So it was a backline team. Chica Ferguson on the wing, Gary Belcher at fullback, you know. So we moved the ball, and that's why Ricky got his game of halfback, because the other halfbacks couldn't throw the ball as far as he could with his left hand, in particular left to right, the rugby union background, and him kicking left and right footed. The others were in many ways as competitive as Rick, and that's a big statement because there's not too many more competitive than Rick. But Ivan Henjak, Chris O'Sullivan, you know, those sorts of guys, yeah. But Rick had a skill set that suited what I wanted to do based on what the team looked like, you know. Most halfbacks, Greg Alexander, Roy Simmons, they could not throw a left to right. They had to turn their back to throw right to left. You know, the skills of the game have improved dramatically because of coaching and also full-time football. But in those days, Ricky could throw a left to right pass as far as he could throw a right to left and, you know, cut out four people. And when you got backline that we had. So, you know, those sort of things, I'd like to think people, you know, an attacking style of football, to me, is the style to play. You know? Now, if you can score 30 points a game, your opposition have to be able to score 31 to beat you, yeah? And not every team can do that. And I use that as my philosophy, simple as that. Played schoolboy footy as a back, so I didn't play as a bull-fed forward, as they say. Played as a back. I used to love to play and run with the ball and kick a ball and so on. I was a goal kicker and all that. Never got to do that in grade, but the old toe-poke football. But basically it was all about, you know, using the ball and attacking and scoring tries. And so that was my background. So that's what I built a team around that. You know, players who could make a difference in the team offensively were the first I'd look at before I look at their defense. If they couldn't tackle, well, they wouldn't have got that far if they can't tackle. And then it's just a matter with defenses of putting a system together of defense. If they can all tackle and you get them doing the same thing, whether it's jamming in or drifting out or doing whatever, man on man, as long as they can tackle one-on-one, then they're okay. They don't have to be brutal, you know, or, you know, champion wrestlers and all that sort of stuff. But although the game, you know, definitely the speed of the play, the ball controls the game somewhat. But I firmly believe in the offensive side of the game, and other coaches will say differently. But I know in 05, we were giving away a lot of points, scoring a lot of points. We got into the semis against the best teams in the comps, St George, Brisbane, and Parramatta, and Cowboys. We had on average 10 points a game scored against us on average, and 32 points for. So we went through the semifinals undefeated, right, averaging 32 points and only giving up 10. Whereas during the year I was averaging just mid-20s, but we had to score 30 to win, and we were. But we were capable of doing it, and but we didn't have, for whatever reason, the size, experience, and lots of other things in defence, so we had to scramble well in defence. You know, if someone made a break, everyone's effort was to get back on side really quickly, which we were able to do because we weren't a big side. So, you know, and the Raiders, of course, you know, we had two areas there. The 88 side should have won it. Great side. Had all those players before they went off to Brisbane. Some of them went off to Brisbane. Sammy Bacco on them. Then we won it, you know, 89, 90, and unlucky 91. And then had to reinvent ourselves and get it good again for 94. So, but again, it was with the core of the team, you know, Laurie, Ricky, Mal, and so on, and a good bunch of young kids coming through, the Mullinses and that of this world, Croker, and we redid it again. But to say, I was very, very lucky to be involved with those guys, you know. Like, you know, I might have helped them, but they certainly helped my reputation too. Don't worry about that.
Tim,
worried the hell out of me as well, that everyone would get to the game on time and I'd have no problem after the game when they hit Canberra on a nightclub. I'd have to go down there. That was my excuse anyway. Go down there and make sure I stayed with them to make sure they did the right thing.
Well, Canberra is a small town. I'm sure you had your feelers out for what those boys were up to. But Tim,
yeah, I was told. Don't worry.
It's been an absolute pleasure to interview you today and to get to know you over a few phone calls as we prepared. It's just it's a complete masterclass, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening whose career you've helped along the way and whose lives you've touched through those fan events and so forth. But I can only thank you again for making the time available and taking us a little bit behind the curtain on what's been a stellar career.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks very much, mate. It's brought back a lot of memories, good and bad. But more good than bad, mate, so don't worry. So, and I'll be ready for the phone calls from Ricky and that when it comes. I'll see you next week anyway. You'll let me know then.
Thanks, Tim.
No problem. Thanks, Paul. All the best.
Hi, everyone. You have been listening to the great coach, Tim Sheens. I hope you got a lot out of Tim's story and found a few ideas that you can bring back to your own dinner table, locker room, or work table for discussion. When I listened back, some of the other key highlights for me were how his experience having coached four players who have ultimately gone on to coach their own premiership teams has taught him that you can't pick who is going to go on and become a good coach. His view that when you leave a club, you leave a legacy. When you go to a club, you gain a legacy. And the challenge is to do what you can to improve it. And how if you don't treat the players with respect, you won't last long in the job. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. Just like Trent Williams, who after listening to our Brandon Joyce podcast said, "Great listen and lessons from a legend." Thanks, Trent. We love the interaction with the people around the world who listen. And so if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. And if they're positive ones, then please let your friends know too. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.